Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
Hey, y'all. I want to let y'all know that you can get more small doses. Yes, I am now doing weekly small doses bonus episodes, and they are for my people at the SEAL Squad. So if you ain't getting enough of this, baby, there is more for you. This is a little taste of what you're getting.
Shout out to everybody joining us in the chat. If you're listening later, glad you're listening. And just shout out to all of y'all for being members of the SEAL Squad and getting to get this little bonus episode right here, which essentially ends up being my weekly free therapy session outside of my visits to my psychiatrist. So I want to talk about a few things. I want to talk about how to support friends. I want to talk about leaving Instagram. I want to talk about the burden of purpose. Okay.
A spoonful of sugar makes all that go down. And let me tell you something. I'm having a great time getting to be more connected with y'all because when we do the small doses bonus episodes, we do them live. So you get to be in the chat interacting with yours truly. So if you've been thinking about, do I want to join Patreon? Now is the time. Become a member of the SEAL Squad and expand your love of the small doses. Get you more doses, small doses bonus episodes at patreon.com.
Self-help
from the hip.
Small doses.
We're talking that shit.
Small doses.
And keeping
it real. Small doses.
With
me and
them seals. It's so funky. Welcome to another episode of Small Doses Podcast. Now, this is a unique episode. We haven't done one of these in quite some time, but I thought it was overdue for us to do an all DMT episode. We talk about so many topics here. We really, I feel like, are just expansive in the way that we are able to share stories, share information, share experiences, etc. And so I know that you guys have inquisitiveness around these things, and I know that you guys always have questions for me. So I said, let's do it. Let's dust off a DMT episode and give the people a voice. So you are going to hear our producer, AJ, who's going to read me these questions from you guys, and I'll do my best to answer them, and let's just connect right here on another episode of Small Doses Podcast. Shout out to everybody who is a first-time listener. Just know that you can check out bonus episodes of Small Doses Podcast where you can actually be in the chat and ask me these questions in real time by being a member of our Patreon. All right, let's do it.
DMT, we're serving it.
Fire away. And for the record, I have not seen any of these questions before he's asking me them.
All right. First question, just sending love. How are you holding up?
So I know that this question is in response to the attack on Amanda. It's literally like Sharknado, but just like with like black media. And I'm glad I can laugh about it. And I can laugh about it because I have a good psychiatrist and because I'm surrounded by people who know me and who are emotionally intelligent enough to be able to show me love. And also because of
viewers like you.
It's really, first of all, going viral is very surreal because it's like happening outside of you. It's like a very thing. We have a whole episode about it coming up. But I think that we've really gotten to a point where people just do not realize that they're dealing with real people. When they deal with people that are on the internet or just people that have a certain level of visibility, celebrity, like they just think that they're like not real people. And because of that, then they don't feel the need to treat them like humans. So if we put this in the context of Palestinians, the effort, and we can put this in the context of the Jewish people of the Holocaust in Germany, the effort to make their murder and their martyrdom, well, the oppressor doesn't call it a martyrdom, but the effort to make their murders, you know, acceptable first began with dehumanizing them, referring to them as animals, referring to them as people without a love, without a culture, without a home, without a heart. Even just the idea of Palestine and them trying to say that it was a valid invasion of Palestine that happened in 1948. They tried to say that there was no culture there. There was nothing there. They civilized Palestine. All that is a lie. But that is a tool. It's a tactic. The dehumanization of people is a tactic that has been used on many scales to then make the degradation of them okay. Now, on a much, 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 much infinitively smaller scale, it's like, oh, well, if we just dehumanize these celebrities or whatever and make it like they're not valuable or they're not like alive human beings, then we can just say whatever the hell we want about them and we don't have to have a conscience about it. And once people decide that they don't need to have a conscience, they get wild. The human being as an animal is really, really not okay. And will go to the ends of the earth if it lets itself in terms of wickedness. We've seen so many examples of this. So I just say that to say that you got to ask yourself how you interact on this internet and think about like people's humanity. I'm doing okay because there's enough people around me in my circle that care about my humanity more than they care about my celebrity, et cetera, et cetera. And I've had to go through a lot in my life to learn that I need to put my humanity first before I care about any of that other shit either. So thank you for asking.
Next question. What do you do when you feel hopeless? How do you center yourself and regain strength?
You know, that's a really great question because I didn't have an answer for that before last week. I feel like what I would do when I was hopeless in the past was just like hope for it to pass. And I didn't have like an active, necessarily like measured or like strategic practice on how to deal with that. You know, again, like I'm fortunate that I have people around me who I can talk to. So that becomes a part of that. But it really was something that I learned last week was that I really have to unplug. And the thing about unplugging is sometimes we think of unplugging as like, oh, I gotta go to vacation, right? Or I gotta like change locations. But for the first time, maybe ever, I consciously just like put my brain on ice and just like watched movies and TV and ate snacks and let myself just be. And it proved to be very effective in allowing my brain the pause that it needed from being just in a loop around the madness. And sometimes it's around the hopelessness that we find our brain is in a loop, right? We keep going in a loop of trying to figure out what a solution is and we can't find it and then it feels hopeless. You know, right now, there's a hopelessness that I have just every day as it relates to not only what's going on in Gaza and in Congo and the Sudan, but the way the world is dealing with it. Just watching the mendacity, just the waterfall of fuckery that goes down on a daily basis. You're just like, what is this really where we are? And so there is a hopelessness around that that I definitely am still trying to deal with. I mean, I went on Lexapro, which I had never really considered going on medication for mental health before. But I have a theory. I feel like we are in a world now that is so processed and is manufacturing so much that it is now also manufacturing hate. It literally creates hate out of thin air. And there's so much hurt and trauma that hasn't been dealt with. And baby, all of that energy exists. Just so we're clear, energy is a real thing. It's like when you stand next to a piano and you can feel the sound of the piano hitting you. That's energy. When you're in a room and someone walks in the room and it just rubs you the wrong way, that's energy. Now, by the way, that energy might be your energy. The rubbing the wrong way might be the fact that your energy is off. So I just want to say that. But energy is a real thing. We are combusting. We are made of atoms, y'all. We are an engine that is always combusting. Your heart beating is an engine. Like when you look at a car engine, it's the same shit as a body. All of these pieces need to work together to make this thing move. So we are in a world where the energy is so processed with hate and mendacity and just negative things that some of our spirits literally can't process the energy. It's like being diabetic and not being able to process sugar. You need insulin to help you do that because you physically cannot. I think some of us are ending up on meds because we spiritually cannot process the energy that is existing right now. or that ever was existing. And I think that's a real thing that I've had to admit to myself. Like, I simply just cannot process it. My spirit, my soul cannot break it down in order to be something valuable to me. And so I need help.
Raise a spoon to Grandma, who always took all the hungry cousins to McDonald's for McNuggets and the play slide. Have something sweet in her honor. Come to McDonald's and treat yourself to the Grandma McFlurry today. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. At participating McDonald's for a limited time.
I've always thought of Black media as a place where we are represented and also protected, as a place where we are uplifted and empowered. And I know that that is sometimes more shown in potential than in actuality, but on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths, we get to see it in real time. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black stories, Black truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now, they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. Hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcasts that center Black voices. It's NPR Noir. Turn on NPR today and hear a range of voices as varied, nuanced, and bliggity Black as the country we reflect. Stories should never be about us without us. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get podcasts.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
Next question, on a bit of a lighter note, how are you so fly, and when and how did your love of bonobos begin?
Oh my God, two great questions. How am I so fly? My mom is fly. Like, my mom has always been like super duper stylish. That's really her thing. And then she always had me stylish. But then I was off the, I had a tough road for a while there, y'all. I was wearing platform Skechers. I just had every color Kangol you can think of. I mean, there was an awkward phase that lasted far longer than it should have. Far longer than it should have. But, you know, I would say around my 30s, I started to figure it out. And I had a stylist tell me, you know, Amanda, you're an artist. And I talk about this in my book, Small Doses, available in hardback, paperback, and on audiobook. I had a stylist tell me, you know, Amanda, you're a painter. And if you looked at your body as the canvas, you would be able to style yourself. And that was something I had never considered. Like, I'm really, really good with color. So she was basically telling me, like, you're really good with color. You're a painter. You know how to put color together. Like, bring that together in how you dress. And that just opened up a whole world for me in terms of, like, how I put style together. And it took some time. But now I really know what my style is. My style is basically, can a regular bitch pull this off? Like, that's basically my style. If it can't be pulled off by just anybody, give it up. I want it. I'm challenging myself. I just remember my friend Mike Walker in high school. He had these green Adidas, and we always used to clown these green Adidas because they were just so big. Like, his feet were so big. And we were like, why did you buy these? And he was like, because they're so ugly. Look at how ugly these shoes are. He's like, Amanda, these are the ugliest shoes ever. And I just felt like, you know what? I can bring joy to these ugly shoes. It's a challenge. Sometimes I will literally buy something because I'm just like, this is so ugly, it deserves love. Like, I wish, you know, I wish I didn't do that with, like, the spirit of niggas I date. But that's, you know, it's a work in progress.
Yikes.
I'm also just really relieved that as I've gotten older, by the way, that my style has kept up with my aging. I'm really relieved that I'm not 42 and still like, why can't I wear Poom Poom shorts? Like, I'm just really, really glad because I didn't know what was going to happen. I don't know. You know, sometimes we get to an age and we're like, no, but I still want to. So I'm really just relieved that like, I feel like my style has matched my maturation process. So bonobos. So bonobos are one of the four great apes. There are orangutans, there are chimps, there are gorillas, and there are bonobos. Bonobos share 98.7% of our DNA, just like chimpanzees. And people know that I love bonobos because I talk about bonobos on my internet all the time. I fell in love with bonobos literally because I just was brought to bonobos by Mark Zuckerberg's internet. And the Instagrams did a suggestion for me because I used to follow some chimpanzee sites like Tacoma and Loiro Primates, and they brought me to bonobos. And then when I started learning more about bonobos from Lolayo Bonobo, which is the only conservation site for bonobos, you can only find bonobos in the Democratic Republic of Congo, by the way. That's the only place where they exist. And so there's this conservation project. And what is so fascinating about bonobos is that they are a matriarchal community. Now, you've seen a lot about chimpanzees, you know, Jane Goodall, et cetera, but you may not know a lot about bonobos because, and this is a very important fact that I think will also show why I was so intrigued by it. When the colonizers came to Africa, they also brought with them scientists and anthropologists and archaeologists, et cetera. And the scientists and anthropologists, they came across different animals. And when they came across the chimpanzees and the bonobos, they were more connected, or they felt more intrigued by the chimpanzees because they felt more like their society. Well, chimpanzees are a patriarchal society. They also have a lot of rage, right? They have a lot of rage, and the way they interact, they're very territorial. And it's no shade to the chimpanzees, but it's very obvious that, yes, a colonizer would look at that and say, yeah, that feels like us, which, by the way, is bonkers. Like, you looked at chimpanzees and said, yeah, that feels like us. That should tell you the problem with yes. But bonobos are matriarchal. And they were just like, we're not interested in that. Well, then that, of course, makes me more interested. Bonobos have literally evolved out of fighting. They solve everything with sex. It's called a bonobo kiss. They literally scissor. When they are, like, in some type of tension, they scissor. And it's all good. When they run across other clans of bonobos, they share their food. They don't fight them. They share their food. The mothers all share in caring for their young. The boy bonobos, when they grow up, they stay as a part of the clan, but the women are still in charge. And they lead with love. And so that, to me, was just such an incredibly intriguing and beautiful fact because it really once again shows us how we can learn from the animal kingdom versus oftentimes people try and use the animal kingdom as a way to discriminate. And the other thing I want to point out about that, though, is that I have this theory. Here's another one of my theories. I have this theory that if evolution is real, there's folks that evolve from chimps and there's folks that evolve from bonobos. Because I also feel there's only two kinds of people, people who want power and people who want peace. So that's my theory. One day I'll write a book of my theories.
Love that.
But you can follow Lola Ya Bonobo, and you can get involved and get in love with bonobos too. And there are bonobos here in America in a number of zoos. Right here in the San Diego Zoo is one of them.
Next question. Why do you think a comedy scene in Grenada and wider Caribbean is low to non-existent?
I think a comedy scene in Grenada and like other Caribbean countries is low to non-existent because literally everybody is funny. Like in America, like being funny is a skill, it's an art. And in like the colonial spaces, like it's a skill and it's an art in a way that it really is like platformed. I also think that it comes out of the, and this is me just waxing poetic, but it comes out of like the royal tradition of there being a jester, like there being somebody to perform for the people. Not even the people, but to form for the royalty. And so I think like that has developed out in Western society in a way that it hasn't in the Caribbean, like anti-colonial spaces that have like debunked, you know, those traditions. I will say though, that I come back to the fact that everyone in Grenada is funny. Even if their funny is like dry humor or sarcasm, like everybody got jokes. It's like legit a thing. So like, if you're a comedian, you're like, how do you perform for a whole audience of funny people? Like, they looking at you like, I got a better joke than that. So I think that's part of it. Now, don't get me wrong. I think that there is a space for it because ultimately everybody want to laugh and not everybody want to make people laugh professionally, right? But I do think that that's part of the reason why is that. And then the third reason is because the Caribbean in general has always done a side eye to the arts, even though they be the best at the arts. Like, they be so about making music, so about making clothes, so about dance. But they be like, that's not a career. That's not like a profession. You know, we just doing this. And then the folks that really be about it, you better be about it for it to be respected. So I think that's part of it too.
Raise a spoon to Grandma, who always took all the hungry cousins to McDonald's for McNuggets and the play slide. Have something sweet in her honor. Come to McDonald's and treat yourself to the Grandma McFlurry today. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. At participating McDonald's for a limited time.
I've always thought of Black media as a place where we are represented and also protected, as a place where we are uplifted and empowered. And I know that that is sometimes more shown in potential than in actuality, but on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths, we get to see it in real time. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black Stories, Black Truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now, they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. Hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcasts that center Black voices. It's NPR Noir. Turn on NPR today and hear a range of voices as varied, nuanced, and bliggity Black as the country we reflect. Stories should never be about us without us. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get podcasts.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
How do you stay creative and original in a world that forces us to play it safe for survival?
I think one of the biggest ways that I stay creative and original in a world that forces us to fight for survival is I surround myself with people who also feel like being creative is a key part of their survival. You know, once you are an artist, like, you can't just not make art. I think that that's something that a lot of people who maybe don't consider themselves artists, like, can't necessarily relate to. But, you know, Herbie Hancock once told me, he was like, everybody's an artist. And I said, Herbie, how do you say that? He said, because life requires creativity. Everybody has to find a way, and it demands creativity. But capitalism has really stunted that in so many folks. Like, their creativity ends up being wielded for just, like, the pursuit of dollars, which is not oftentimes ethical or moral or principled. And art ultimately is a God gift. It is the making of something from nothing. I believe everybody has the capability to do that on a certain extent. And even if you don't do it on a high level, I believe everybody should engage in that to a certain extent as a certain meditative practice. And so for me, it's a matter of life. Like, I have to create art. Like, even no matter how shitty the world is, I would have to create art. If I'm imprisoned, I'd be like, can I have a piece of chalk? Because I can't stab you with a piece of chalk, but can I have a piece of chalk to draw on the wall? You know, like, I would still be writing poems. I remember that to this day, the reason me and yoga have never quite gelled was because the original person who taught me yoga did it in such, like, a contentious mind state, because we were doing yoga as a movement class at SUNY Purchase. And I remember him asking me, what do you think about when you're doing the yoga? And at that time, I was a poet. And he asked me what I think about. And I said, oh, I write poems in my head. And he was like, you're doing it wrong. You're doing the yoga wrong. And I was just like, is that like a thing? Is that even possible? But he just contextualized yoga for me as like this thing that I've just never been able to move past. But notice that even in yoga, even in the meditative space, I was still trying to create because that's the natural place that I go, in a place of peace. So that's how. And I think the other part of it is that I think art is very healing and it can be used to be very informative and it can be used to activate. So it has like so many purposes, particularly in a world that is so full of ignorance and that is forcing us to survive. It has so many restorative and just positive purposes.
In your voice. Next question. What's something you collect that you love to look at that might surprise us?
Oh, that's such a great question. What's something I collect that I love to look at that might surprise you? I collect so many things. I'm not a hoarder. I am a collector. And once I like something, I definitely be like about it. Which is why, like, my mom called me the other day and was like, do you still want these Beanie Babies? Because they're just here collecting dust. I'm like, no, they're still there being collected. Relax. Don't touch my stuff. I would say something that I collect that you all might not know is I collect really cool pillows. That's been a thing. I know what it is. I collect chairs. If anybody comes to my house, they will see that there's mad places to sit in my house. AJ, I don't know if you've ever noticed this. He's like shaking his head.
They're all like different shapes and colors, and some of them are covered in different colors.
I love chairs. I love chairs. And I saw on Instagram one time, this woman has like a wall where she has just like all different like mini chairs that she's collected from like dollhouses and stuff like that. Listen, next home I live in, there's a chair wall coming. It's going to be in like a guest bathroom or something, but I just really love chairs. I don't even know where this came from. I don't know why it is, but I love me a chair, honey. And I'm constantly trying to look for more places to put chairs. All right. There's a corner in this room that if the camera wasn't there, there'd be another chair.
I love it. Next question. What book would you recommend to someone looking for inspiration and power?
The Alchemist, without question. By Paulo Coelho. Because The Alchemist is a very simple read, but it's as deep as you want it to be. And it is always available to you no matter where you are in your life. So what I mean by that is that it's a text that's an allegory. So because it's an allegory, it's a story about life. But the way that it's written, it's a story about literally any time of your life. It's just about when you're reading it, where your head is at. I've read The Alchemist at least 5 times. And every time I read it, it's relevant and helps me to contextualize, you know, kind of like where I am, where I'm going, what I'm doing. So it's very interesting in that way and very just unique in that way as it relates to texts. There's another book by Paulo Coelho called The Warrior of Light, which is not a narrative story like The Alchemist, but it's like a collection of passages. Think of like 48 Laws of Power, but like positive. Like 48 Laws of Power is like literally like, this is how you trick the world. The Warrior of Light is this is how you handle the world that's trying to trick you. And a homeboy of mine sent it to me years back when I needed to remember that I am a warrior of light. And so those two books right there can really help get you through. And they're both by the same author, Paulo Coelho.
Get into it, y'all. Next question. What is a memory that makes you smile?
Well, I'm writing my new book right now, Body Waving Through the Bullshit. And so I'm having to do a lot of memory searching because it's a memoir. I call it a midlife memoir because it will definitely be another memoir at 80. And that's when you'll really get the tea, honey. So I've been having to like go back in memory. So I've been getting to do a lot of smiling because, you know, you're just trying to think of different things. And one of the stories in there is about just my time in high school in the performing arts magnet. And I'm not going to like tell the full tale of the story because I feel like I want you to read it in the book. But just reminiscing on just the uniqueness of my Dr. Phillips High School experience.
IDP.
Always brings a smile to my face. Like, don't get me wrong. I mean, I still had like my high school stuff, but I think I was very, very lucky to have the high school experience I did. And I just feel like my class was like Harry's at Hogwarts. Like, we were just one of a kind. One of a kind. And shout out to Britt Marling. Britt Marling, who is in Murder at the End of the World. She also is the creator of the OA. she went to Dr. Phillips High School with me, and I went to go see my husband from Insecure, Wade Lane Marcus. He directed the remake of Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead for BET Plus. By the way, he did such an incredible job. Please make it your business to see that film. That will bring a smile to your face. But Jermaine Fowler was there. Shout out to Jermaine. And Jermaine was in Murder at the End of the World. And I was like, yo, I really enjoyed the show. Also, Britt Marling and I went to school together. He was like, oh, like college? I was like, no, like high school. Like she used to write, like, give me a ride home in her Volkswagen Bug. He emails her a picture, a selfie of us. And she wrote him back such a nice message. And she was like, Amanda Seales' performance in high school were on another level. He, yes! Thespians, honey. 4276, forever. So that brings a smile to my face, the high school.
Next question, is there ever a point where you will become a professor?
I doubt it. You know, the thing about me is that I really don't do well in institutionalized spaces. I didn't realize how much of an institution Hollywood was until I really made it. And then it was like, oh, this is just another institution. And your girl, it just ain't cut for that. I'm just not cut out. I'm too bohemian. I'm too free. I'm too liberated. And I feel like the academic space is really that. Now, I guess there's a version of which you can do some type of adjunct professorship or whatever. But the reality is, I don't want nobody telling me nothing. And I don't want nobody I don't respect telling me nothing. And that's the frustrating part about institutionals. Institutions oftentimes are people who are in a position that feels like power, but that isn't necessarily earned. You know, they're not necessarily actually like valid or full of merit. So you're having to take. That's like why selling shows gets so frustrating, because you're sometimes pitching people who you're like, I don't even know you. I don't respect you. Like, you've never done anything that like makes me regard or laud you. And here I'm having to like pitch you my creativity? What have you created? So I doubt that you'll see me as a professor, but I do want to continue to create, you know, learning spaces of my own.
Speaking of Hollywood, this follower wants to know, do you still have hope in the industry, or do you believe it's a lost cause?
You know what I always have hope in is creatives. I don't have hope in the industry, because the industry ain't about creatives. The industry is about the industry. But I always have hope in creatives. We always find a way. You know, we always find a way. We always make a way. And ultimately, you know, we lean on each other in order to do that. And I think that will always remain as the cornerstone of where art is coming from. These industries were built around the art, not the other way around.
That's a word.
Raise a spoon to Grandma, who always took all the hungry cousins to McDonald's for McNuggets and the play slide. Have something sweet in her honor. Come to McDonald's and treat yourself to the Grandma McFlurry today. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. At participating McDonald's for a limited time.
I've always thought of Black media as a place where we are represented and also protected, as a place where we are uplifted and empowered. And I know that that is sometimes more shown in potential than in actuality, but on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths, we get to see it in real time. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black Stories, Black Truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now, they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. Hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcasts that center Black voices. It's NPR Noir. Turn on NPR today and hear a range of voices as varied, nuanced, and bliggity Black as the country we reflect. Stories should never be about us. Without us. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get podcasts.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
Next question, what are five places in the world you haven't been to but that you want to go?
Oh, I love a question like this. Okay. I would love to go to Bali. Never been to Bali. I've literally never been to Asia. So I would love to go to Bali. I'm just going to count this as one. So I would love to go to Bali, Thailand, China. Like, I would love to just see Indonesia, Philippines, Vietnam. I'd love to just see that part of the world. I have never been to the Galapagos Islands, and I would love to go to the Galapagos. Y'all know how I feel about animals. I would love to go. I have never been to the Congo. I would really love to go to the Congo, not only to see the bonobos, but also to be some part of helping, you know, the people out there in the Congo, even if it's just to capture content that can help amplify what's going on in the Congo. I would really like to see Petra. It's in the Levant somewhere. So it's either like Lebanon, Iran, et cetera, et cetera. But it's like this ancient city, and it is just one of the most fascinating like builds that humans have ever made. And then two, because I'm going to give you six instead of five, I really would love to go to Sudan. Again, not just because like there's humanitarian work to be done there, but because it's beautiful. Like there's so many places in Sudan, man-made and nature-made, that are just incredible. And like what happens is, particularly in Africa, places get just whittled down to whatever war-torn conflict is happening in that place. But that oftentimes, instead of it making people feel like that's what needs to save that place, oftentimes people like kind of are no longer looking at that place as a place worthy of being saved. Like, oh my gosh, it's just war-torn. And we need to just once again, like, elevate the beauty of Africa and the fact that the people of Africa, they deserve to live in that beauty, in freedom. And the last place I want to go is I want to go to Palestine. And I hope with all of my heart that on the other side of this tyranny and this degradation and just degenerative behavior amongst human beings that has led to a genocide, I hope that the people of Palestine are given the ability to self-actualize and build their land. And I hope that I get the opportunity to come back there and help rebuild.
How was your experience as a child actor?
Oh, so y'all was watching that Nickelodeon.
Mm-hmm. They were. Some people are asking about Dan, too, but we won't talk about
that. So I never met Dan. I mean, he wasn't a part of my experience. You know, my experience as a child actor was actually rather positive. I mean, my brother and me, we only did one season. The cast and the staff were very Black. I was lucky enough to be shooting, like, I'm not even exaggerating, 6 minutes from my house. So I also had a certain, like, comfort just in proximity to home. And I was 12, but I was always a very elevated child, I guess to say. So I was 12 going on, like, 18 in terms of, like, my awareness of my surroundings. And my mother would have to drop me off and go to work. So other people's parents got to stay there all day. I didn't have that luxury. But I was also a well-behaved kid. Like, I knew that I didn't want nobody calling my mom. You know? And I also was not just a well-behaved kid, but I also knew, even at that age, I just knew the measure of what I was getting the opportunity to do. So I wasn't going to try and screw that up either. But I didn't have, like, when I was on My Brother and Me in particular, like, I didn't have any negative experiences with Nickelodeon. There was this one, like, dude that was racist or whatever. But all of us would just be like, get the fuck out of here, Joel. But my mom always reminds me that there was a time where the director was having one-on-ones with all the parents because the kids were apparently out of control. And so then my mom came in and he was like, oh, Amanda's a dream. There's nothing for us to talk about. So that's why when y'all be like, oh, Amanda Seale's difficult to work with. I ain't never been difficult to work with, even when I was 12. I'm difficult to work with because I demand excellence and I'm not very sweet about it. That's why I'm difficult to work with. I also demand you to do the thing you said you was going to do, like on paper that I signed on. But that's a whole other conversation. I'd be trying to be sweeter about it, though. I do, because I know that that's a human necessity. So I do be trying. But sometimes your girl don't got it. Your girl don't got it. I do remember one time, though, where I was doing a commercial and they tried to stuff my bra. Yes, child.
What?
They were like, yeah, like, we would just, can you, like, let's just stuff your bra. And I was like, I don't feel comfortable doing that. I was 15. And so she was like, you know, okay. So then I immediately went and told my mom. And then my mom was like, doof. Did you just tell my child to stuff her bra? By the way, this is for, like, an industrial commercial for the USDA. Like, I don't know why, like, the farmers need me to have tissue titties, okay? So weird stuff like that happens. I think also people just get overcomfortable with kids on set. And kids, we're there being professional, so they adultify us. And so that's why it's so important to have a parent or guardian or representative that is making sure that that is not going too far. And it's so disheartening to see real concrete 4K evidence of people like Amanda Bynes and Ariana Grande not having the people there that needed to be doing that.
Agreed. What are you going to do just for yourself and your joy today?
Eat cheese. I'm going to have the last of my cheese, my Dubliner cheese sticks. And then I have to go on a break because I'd be doing too much. So I'm going to have to not have cheese for the rest of the month. But y'all, I'm going to savor every nibble of that cheese stick. I know some of y'all are like, really, that's the best you could do? Yes, because I am very busy. But I've been thinking about that cheese stick all day.
As I look for the next question, I just want to say your fans and supporters are really riding for you. Everyone is like, I just want to check in. Are you okay? No question. I love you. So your love, just know that. We got your back.
Thanks, y'all. As an only child and as like a geek, a late bloomer, someone who was like bullied for various reasons. I would be bullied for all kinds of reasons. I don't like you. You talk white. I don't like you. You light skin. I don't like you. You think you're smarter than everybody else. You an encyclopedia. And I'd be like, well, I just knew the answer. Like, so that was like my formative years. Like, those are the things that I would be bullied for. So to then like grow up as an adult and then like, I don't even know what I'm being bullied for in this case, if I'm being perfectly honest. I just don't even know because they can't even get their act together. They can't even get on the same page about like what the issue is. You know, it's just basically like, I mean, we don't like her tone. But I just feel like what's my tone? I mean, and there's so many people who are fine with my tone and love the tone and feel empowered by the tone. So it's also a measure of ego when people feel like, well, my version of this is the version that matters. But I will say that it really, as that person who has always kind of been, you know, in the space of having a target, it really feels just really, really, it's like a really big deal to feel supported in this way. I've never been supported in this way in my life. And it's not a small thing.
Raise a spoon to Grandma, who always took all the hungry cousins to McDonald's for McNuggets and the play slide. Have something sweet in her honor. Come to McDonald's and treat yourself to the Grandma McFlurry today. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. At participating McDonald's for a limited time.
I've always thought of Black media as a place where we are represented and also protected, as a place where we are uplifted and empowered. And I know that that is sometimes more shown in potential than in actuality, but on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths, we get to see it in real time. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black Stories, Black Truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now, they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. Hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcasts that center Black voices. It's NPR Noir. Turn on NPR today and hear a range of voices as varied, nuanced, and bliggity Black as the country we reflect. Stories should never be about us without us. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get podcasts.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
Next question, what inspired Smart, Funny, and Black? I went to a show and loved it. Curious about the journey.
Okay, so let's begin way back, 2014. I was doing a lot of shows at the Stand Comedy Club. I was doing a lot of stand-up at the Stand Comedy Club, and they offered me a show on the weekends, basically where they're just like, hey, like you can have a time slot on the weekend where you can do your own show and have your own audience and take money off the door, et cetera. So I said, cool. They were located in like, at the time, they were located in like the 20s and like the financial kind of Chelsea financial district, a lot of like the white boys who do coke district. So I was like, I want to be able to bring a different kind of audience here, you know, like a smart, like funny black audience. You know what? I'm gonna just call it a show, Smart, Funny, and Black. So I hit up Mark Lamont Hill because y'all don't know, but Mark Lamont Hill is actually hilarious. And I was like, do you want to like partner with me in doing this comedy show? So we actually started Smart, Funny, and Black together just as a showcase of Smart, Funny, Black comics. Also because as I got more involved in comedy, because I started doing comedy in 2013 as a stand-up, as I got more involved, I saw that basically there was like, you're either a black comic in the style of Comic View or you're a black comic that performs for white people. But there's like so many comics in the middle that aren't black in the style of Comic View, but that also want to perform for black people. And I just felt like we needed a space for like that kind of comedy, like kind of like, you know, intellectual black comics, you know, more like leaning on clever versus necessarily like the physical side of things, et cetera. And so that was also what the goal was, to create a space for that particular kind of comedy. And so you just call it Smart, Funny, and Black, and you know exactly what it is. So we did that. And then when I moved to LA, Mark has had a lot going on. So we kind of just like drifted apart. And when I moved to LA, the thing that was always happening in LA with comedy was called Comedy with a Catch. And everybody would have a show that was like some type of like format. So I remember there was one that was like strip comedy and like every joke you tell, if people don't laugh, you got to strip something. Then there was like a WWE comedy and it was like wrestler, like on a wrestling format. Like everybody had something that was Comedy with a Catch. So then I just remember one Saturday afternoon, it just like came to me and I was like, I feel like I should bring Smart, Funny, and Black back because I hadn't been doing it in LA. But I was like, I feel like I should rebrand Smart, Funny, and Black, but like in like this Comedy with a Catch format. And I remember telling my mom, I distinctly remember saying to my mom, like, I really feel like maybe it should be a game show. And she was like, yeah, I don't know. And I was like, no, this time you're wrong. I think that's what it needs to be. And it started from there. So I just started kind of ideating around what that would be. Then I had a workshop in my house. I literally like invited my friends over and had a workshop where we workshopped Smart, Funny, and Black as a show. And then it evolved from there. And I started doing it in the back of this comic book store called Nerd Melt. And we did that for a year every month. I sold it to True TV and I got it back because they were racist. They literally said to me, we just want to make sure we're not doing a show only for black people. They literally suggested that I have Michael Rapaport do the intros to the games so that their audience would feel more comfortable seeing a white person. Look where Michael Rapaport is now. Ciao.
Exactly. The stories write themselves at this point.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. And if people really listen to my stories, I am very detailed. Like when people listen to my stories and say she's always complaining or she's always the problem, you're just not listening. Because I'm detailed and I will tell you where I was wrong. But baby, I wasn't wrong in this one. Not in this one, huh?
Some people are wanting a little bit of advice for family stuff. So one person asked, how do you deal with a loved one's or a partner's family posting anti-immigrant or racist rhetoric?
Well, how does your partner deal with it is the real question. Because that's not really for you to deal with. But if your partner is co-signing it or not really like about it, and then they expect you to be around them, that becomes a real issue for me. Because it's like, it's one thing if your partner's like, oh, you know, I don't really rock with them. But it's like, if you see them doing that, and then now I got to come and like spend time with them, and then you're going to expect me to be polite, baby, we got issues. We're not on the same page. Because one thing about me is I'm not going to be polite if they are that type of low character, low vibrational person. It's just not going to happen.
Are you still planning to get yourself a new trampoline as a joy source?
I really want to, but I just feel like my setup here is not conducive to one. So we'll see. I have some life moves that I'm working on that may make it for a better place and better space.
Another person asks, who would you like to work with in the future?
Who would I like to work with in the future? You know, Ray Angry is a producer that produced Niggas Got Me Fucked Up. He works a lot with The Roots. He produces a lot with The Roots. And I would love for us to just actually do a full album. We've like tinkered and toyed with the idea before, but then it just kind of fades away. But like, I would love for us to do like a full album. Ebro be on my head about doing an album. He's like, you got bops. You got bops. You be doing these bops on the internet. And I'm like, I do got bops. So that's something that would be really dope. And Mo Better Woo was the musical that I wrote with Chris Bowers, who is an incredible scorer. He scored Bridgerton. He scored The Origin. He scored Green Book. And I would just love for us to do Mo Better Woo again, but like for real, you know, like as a stage run. But to be perfectly honest right now, I'm just really focusing on the Amanda Seales ecosystem of it all. I've done a lot of work with a lot of people and I've had a lot of great experiences. I just think I'm leaning into like, what does it look like if I'm the North Star in this particular galaxy? And I think once I really lock that down, I'll feel more inclined again to step outside and collab.
Do you have a ritual or daily practice that brings you joy?
Do I have a ritual or daily practice that brings me joy? It's like weird. Like, I don't like when others break my routine, but I break my routines all the time. I used to have a regimen for 3 months that I would do on a regular basis where I would wake up every morning, I would stretch, I would do a headstand for 3.5 minutes, I would go in the sauna for 20 minutes, and then I would take a cold shower. And I did this for 3 months as a healing practice after I was SA'd. And I wouldn't say that necessarily brought me joy, but it did bring me peace. I would say a daily practice that I have that brings me joy. I really love studying Arabic on Duolingo. Like, really, like, I enjoy it a lot. Like, one of the things I always encourage people to do is like to impress yourself. Like, it's consistent. Like, as adults, we need to continue learning and we need to continue impressing ourselves. And it's like, it does both in one well fell swoop. Like, it's so cool to be able to look at written Arabic and not just look at squiggles. I'm like, oh, like, I don't know what it means, but I know what that say. And sometimes I do know what it means. And I'm like, oh my God, Walad, Imra'a. That says Anna. That means I. Oh, Walad is man and Imra'a is woman.
Okay, bilingual.
Listen, I be trying a little something.
What land, sea, and air animal would you be?
What land, sea, and air animal would I be? Big fan of the otter. I'm a dolphin. Oh, no question. I'm a dolphin. They're smart as heck. You know, they're fun, they're sexual, they're playful, they be swimming. I'm obsessed with the ocean. I'm out here. I'm a dolphin. Or, I mean, obviously, I'm a seal! I mean, you know, I can't be a seal, but y'all could be a member of the seal squad. So make sure you subscribe to my Patreon. And again, like, we do this essentially every week on the bonus episode of Small Doses Podcast. You guys can be in the live asking questions in real time. And even if you can't be there, you still get access to the episode. So that's been a really cool space, all my seal squad members. So shout out to all my seals. Whenever you see me post on Instagram and I put a picture of seals and it says my people, that's because my name is Amanda Seales. The amount of times people have been like, oh my God, I'm just getting that today is hilarious.
The last dose.
I really appreciate these questions. They're so thoughtful. They're so indicative of just how unique of an audience I have been able to grow with you guys, being so compassionate and insightful and kind, right? And kind, you know, when I feel like when my people go ham and support me, like they don't just be in the comments trolling and being mean. Like, they're going to hit you with intellect. They're going to like break down like your argument and show you how it's like false. Like, that's my supporters. When I see other people's supporters, I'm like, just so you know, your supporters are just mean and dumb. And that is not it, honey. You don't want them out here representing you. I don't want nobody ever being out there being mean and dumb in my name. Do not do it in my honor, baby. It is not it. We are noble. We are classy. We are loving. That's what we do. So we will correct folks. Now, if they come out their face, you know, do what you got to do. But don't ever feel like I'm wanting y'all to support me in that way. Nah. We up here. You know, we're on a high vibration. It's not just a Lego logo high. We're in another dimension, baby. That's where we at. I thank y'all so much. It was very clear that you all are in that dimension in these questions. And I hope that I met the comments. I hope I met the answers at the same level. And that's it. Ba-dum-bum.